I'm Susan Montanaro, and you're listening to Dreams and Detours, a show about the life we plan to have versus the one we're living, for better or not. Everybody has a story, and I believe we find ourselves in each other's stories.
Hi, it's Susan Montanaro. I recently sat down with Kimberly Pittman Schultz to talk about grief and loss. It's actually an area of humanity I'm really drawn to. Kimberly is an award-winning poet and author who writes, teaches, and speaks about death. She wrote a wonderful book, Grieving Us, A Field Guide for Living with Loss Without Losing Yourself. You may be thinking this sounds like a discussion too heavy, but it's really full of hope and incredible practices that guide us toward ourselves and feeling joy once again. Loss is inevitable, but when we create rituals that honor that loss, we can find a way to coexist with both the beauty and the ugly parts of life. It was such a delight to meet Kimberly, and I can't wait to meet up with her again to continue the conversation. In the meantime, you can find out more about the beautiful work she is doing to help people cultivate joy every day at poetowl.com/dreamsdetours. Please welcome Kimberly Pittman Schultz.
It's great to see you. So I'm glad we're here today.
Great to be seen and good to see you too.
Yeah, absolutely. I absolutely treasure Grieving Us, your book.
Thank you. That's good to know, especially coming with your background and professional experience and expertise.
Well, you know what? I'm a new psychotherapist. And even though a lot of the focus in my training did indeed include grief, and it was specific, I wanted that. What we can, and this so feeds into really the conversation I want to have with you today. I think what we can take from our personal experiences in life, more so than the clinical training, if you will, of any certificate or academic program that might be offered, lends for such a compassionate or deeper, perhaps, understanding and connection when it comes to grief, the topic, the conversation, the experience, the aftermath.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's
think actually,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's,
and I think reading your book has really informed me on so many levels of the way in which your experiences have not only shaped you as a person, but you as a community member, as a philanthropist, as a charitable individual, and as your own individual in terms of your own journey of managing things that may come up in your own personal space. And so, wow. It's incredible.
I appreciate that feedback, because in writing the book, one of my concerns was, because I'm not a clinical, you know, psychotherapist or social work background or professional grief counselor, is just, you know, kind of checking to make sure that anything I offered, even though it works for me and it's worked for other people I've worked with, that it wasn't harmful, you know, that, and so what I discovered a little bit along the way in the writing is, so often what I found my way to, there are actually methodologies or platforms or approaches that tie in, you know, from a professional standpoint. So I then felt a lot more confident about just putting it out there and just wanting to be helpful. So I appreciate your feedback immensely.
Yeah, no, and I'll tell you, I mean, when we stop and think about the way in which any type of grief counseling work might occur, often what we find are, and this is the work that I tend to do, is work in group form. Because mm-hmm. at the end of the day, what we're really hoping and seeking is someone who has had a shared experience, or someone who can bring that level of empathy and understanding to us when we are trying to make sense of who we are and what just happened and how we pick up these pieces. In some cases, people are absolutely shattered. And like your book describes, you know, it doesn't have to be the loss, first of all, of a person. It can be the loss of a pet. It's really the disruption to our everyday and our habits and our lifestyle that end up deeply impacting us. Hence the loss of an animal. Oof, I mean, my God, that sometimes, like you've said, is so much more of a cut inside of our hearts than anything else. And so, yes, while the auntie, the uncle, the cousins, and while even the distant siblings or what have you are, certainly there's pain involved or loss involved. But yeah, you really can't measure anyone else's pain anyway. So I think the comfort you can find in each other is all what it's all about. So in terms of your getting somebody telling you you're now certified, I think just making sure we don't harm people in our everyday lives was all you needed. So, and you're already that person. So
that's good to know.
Do you know what I mean? Like you already knew you were that person, which is why you're capable and you're doing this brilliant work you're doing. And so I absolutely love it.
I appreciate that. And I appreciate you taking time to check out the book. You know, I really do appreciate that as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So in doing so though, I grabbed some nuggets that I thought could be really cool for us to talk about because these are, you know, you created essentially an awesome book that had a very, like, it's like a pathway for those who are listening. It's this just interesting journey that, you know, you share a lot of stories of either your own personal experiences or the ones you bear witness, you were able to bear witness to and experience with others. And you cultivated really like these different practices and rituals that people might want to consider implementing and utilizing as their own tools for the process in which they will go through when they're mourning and going through a loss. And so I love how you referred to the living with loss as loss limbo initially.
I love that. Right?
Right? Is that like just something that sort of just came to you and you're like, this perfectly describes it?
Well, when you're a writer, right? I mean, words are one of the tools that kind of helps me, but it just feels that way because you're, I mean, when I, especially that 2-year period after my mother and after Ruth died, it really did just feel, you know, we had a complicated relationship and all that kind of stuff, which I think can add to that, but it really does feel like limbo. You feel like you're between two different worlds and you're a little ungrounded. I mean, you do feel lost.
That was a perfect way to put it. I guess I, like you, I appreciate words and wouldn't really call myself a writer, but I love it. And so, yeah, that was very meaningful. And so I really, really like that. And I also noticed, and tell me if this is correct and fair to say, I think that, you know, we talk about, you know, we get into this work or we are maybe gravitate toward it and that stems from perhaps our own experiences with it. Mm-hmm. You know, we surely at any time in a person's life, you know, there's loss. It's just, that's life, you know? And so I feel like that could be even where someone might find themselves propelled to do that kind of work. And it's hard because it means possibly touching those parts of yourself that ached at some point in time. And even though the whole point is to learn to live with loss as opposed to trying to wait until it's like gone because it's really never going to go away. And that's also like a brilliant like reinforcement that you mentioned, you know, like it's really about living with it. But I really love the idea of not holding it in and telling your loss story and starting from there. You've shared versions of your different moments in time. And I think that for the reader of your book, that immediately will suck them in because they immediately will know that they're listening to and following the words of a person who can really meet them right here, right now, where they might be feeling or had been feeling. And so, I mean, I don't know, I'm always sucked into that. So that's exactly where it left me. And so then the idea of the importance of telling the story. And I think people sometimes don't want to talk about it.
Well, and to themselves. I mean, what I've found over time is so often early on, there's the burden of telling it because people want to know what happened.
Right.
And everybody responds differently. So you end up telling that story different ways to different people. And then there's a whole attitude about, I don't want to burden other people. A lot of times mothers, frankly, fall into that. It's like, I've got to be strong. I can't burden others. And so they never stop and actually tell the lost story to themselves. I mean, really go through what's real. And it's painful, but it's also surprisingly healing for most people. Now, sometimes you have to wait to your point to do it, that you're strong enough. But those who have gone through that, it's been really, really powerful.
See where that's true, because again, kind of now going down, but not, I don't want to jump. We will jump around a little bit. It's kind of fun.
That's fine. I'll just follow you.
I think it's just because I know it's weird to say this is exciting, but it is exciting because it makes so much sense. And so when we think of loss, when we experience loss, this was another moment where you mentioned how it's never just a singular experience in terms of the loss. You know, you lose the individual, then you lose the version of yourself who was with that individual. Yes. And then you lose the life that you had because that person was in your life and how it might have shaped, colored, and designed it in a certain way. And I could tell you right now, without having someone actually die, I've had that. And it's the most disturbing thing that you can go through, because it does rock your world. It does change your every day. And there are many ways in which you lose the person maybe that you loved, even if you don't love them the same way anymore, because they aren't the same person. So even though that loss might be painful, but bearable, you lose the structure of your every day. Ooh, a little wonky, a little uncomfortable. Who am I? How do I navigate now?
And it's hard to pinpoint sometimes. People sometimes can't figure out, like, I was talking with somebody yesterday. I mean, one of the things that's been interesting about this is, you know, people who've read the book, and there's other things I'm doing too that I'm not asking people, you know, what are you struggling with? And to hear some of their stories and what they're struggling with. And so often, even people that seem to be doing well with moving through their grief and trying to get their life back together will say things like, it's weird, but like the sparkle's gone, or I'm going along and I suddenly cry and I try to figure out what it is. I really think, you know, in talking with them, it's often these little points in time that are now their gaps. And even if they're not intellectually saying, oh yeah, this is, you know, every day around 11 is when I would have my cup of tea and think of my mom, you know, I think for some people, trying to actually bring some awareness to that can actually help, so that they realize and can begin to maybe build some bridges through those places.
Right. Where there's like little pockets of vacancy in their timeline or in their schedule suddenly. Yeah. I think that we don't always think of it in that way. And it does creep up, and then it does sort of startle a person because they're like, wait, why am I feeling so fragile again when I thought I might have found strength, you know? And yeah, that's really hard. That's definitely hard. Or how about like, I know this is going to sound a little strange. It might be a little bit of a departure from the general, lesson here. But when I first started participating and co-running and then eventually running grief groups, mm-hmm. these were for spouses who lost their partners, husbands, wives, what have you. Most of the time it actually ends up being women that you're with, because men tend to die earlier, but not always. And I had lost love in my life and had suffered for many years with a tremendous hole in my heart missing. And nothing could fill that, not at the time. But at least I was incapable of finding what fit right into the space. That's so there's this huge vacancy in my heart. And I felt so empty and in so much pain on a regular basis. That was my story. So here I am all of a sudden, fast forward, I'm running grief groups. And when I'm listening to individuals sharing their stories about their partner, the things that they loved to do, and just expressing themselves, the things that they miss, the things that they are struggling with still, I can do this alone, but I struggle this, or the holidays are coming, or our anniversary, you know, calendar moments
all
and
those
stuff,
things, yeah.
All those things. And when I'm listening, this was in the very beginning, I kept thinking, I have a hole in my heart too, that hasn't been filled yet by a person with a name on it, let's say. And I feel as raw, as vulnerable, as pained, perhaps, as a person who might have lost the individual who was able to supply all of that to you or to them, right, for that period. And I used to think in my head and weigh that, not for my own benefit, like just to try to understand, like, you know, we grieve in so many different ways and we encounter loss in so many ways. And so it's just fascinating to me. You know, not to measure, because again, I always say this, like you cannot measure pain.
But it is a real loss.
But it's an interesting dichotomy of like what you had and lost versus what you didn't have but wanted, and kind of leaves you in a very strange predicament.
Well, it's that expectation, right? Because in somewhere, whether you ever thought about it, there was this expectation or something that you had thought at some point you would have.
Right.
And then at some point you realize, I don't have that right now. And, right. you know, it's like people who had really troubling relationships or were estranged from a loved one and then their loved one dies. You know, I still think of a young, a college student though, when I worked at this one university, who was just so mad at her father. And, you know, and I said, well, I forget what the conversation was, but something along the lines said, well, you know, when you love people, and she goes, well, I didn't love him. So why do I care? Why do I care that he's gone? And I said, well, and we talked a little bit about a relationship. And I said, well, what you've also lost is the opportunity of that relationship and that love. And so I think that really ties in that there was this expectation she wasn't getting from her father, and now he was gone. So she was never going to have it. And she's like, I never thought about it that way at all. Cause she kept wondering, how can I care that my father is dead? Because she just thought she hated him.
Right. And thought that I didn't have him anyway, the way I wanted him. So what difference does it make? But you're
exactly.
so right. The expectation of what we desire is very real and really creates something inside of us. And so, yeah, that's kind of a cool way of being able to help her shift her focus and start to see something else. I love that. How'd you get into
doing
this?
Well, it's a lot of energy.
Yeah, no, it is a lot of energy. How did you find yourself ending up in this pathway? I think it's just
it's
tremendous.
Really strange. I mean, no one sets out, you know, when all the other kids wanted to be ballerinas and firemen, I didn't say, you know, I want to work in philanthropy and talk with people about death. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, right. It doesn't work that way, right?
Right.
I think because I had loss at such a young age, it made me very curious and also very open. And it's interesting for me because at times, like reading somebody's stories or hearing their, you know, having a conversation, you know, it deeply impacts me. And you think, why would you put yourself out there? And yet it's oddly healing, not only for me, but if I feel like I can offer, and I always say, like I said, I don't automatically offer advice because people sometimes just want you to witness and listen and be there.
That's
but
right.
if I feel like I can offer something, I'll say, you know, could I offer an idea or I could offer a thought about something that kind of helped me or kind of helped another person that I maybe just talked to 2 days ago. And they will, you know, and if they say yes, I'll share that. And so the way I kind of got into it is really in working in philanthropy and through my writing, because I went back at some point and I looked at my writing, and a lot of my writing is about loss and living with loss and finding joy and beauty in the midst of it. And it's everywhere, right? So I think working through philanthropy, I became, and even people in my field hadn't really thought about this. It's so much of what stimulates people's desire to give, whether that's a philanthropic financial gift or volunteering or random acts of kindness. It's often when you delve down and get to know people really deeply, and I'm extremely curious about people, you'll find that there's some little nugget of pain in there that drives, you know, there is some sort of loss in there or some sort of hurt that drives a lot of that desire. And that is part of their, what I think of, I think, you know, that meaning making that is helping them go on.
Yeah.
So, you know, when if I become kind of conscious to me, then that's when I realized I want to be more intentional in working in the space. And then when the pandemic hit, that's really what made me feel like I want to write the book, and my husband's in his end of lifetime. So, you know, it's also a way of self-soothing. You know, when you're helping others, you're helping yourself. And whenever you're teaching something, you're also, you know, becoming more knowledgeable for yourself as well. And I know for me, I appreciate your comment about the book having an arc and having practices. So many of the things that seemed to be missing in books that I had read is they'll say things like, take a walk in nature and that'll make you feel it. But if you're in that, you know, in the bear cave mode, how do you take a walk? You know, and so it was really going back and figuring out, how did I make that transition? And it really did start with that first little tiny come back to your senses ritual, which I didn't even have a name for it then, you know, creating that break in grief in which something else could begin to enter, and then widening that out. And so, so I just became more intentional and wanted to, and felt like the book could really hopefully be helpful to people that were navigating all kinds of losses. I mean, they may have lost absolutely no one to COVID or to anything else. I mean, a lot of people who died did not die of COVID, but what's worse than socially distanced living is socially distanced dying. And I, you know, that led to a lot of people talking to me about, you know, their advanced directives and can they put language in there that they don't want to go to the hospital and be on a ventilator if they get COVID.
Sure.
It was just an interesting, mind-blowing time about a year ago.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I could see where, you know, once you become conscious of what's going on, that would be a very quick decision to make that's not how you would like to see the end of your life play out. And, very sad. I mean, just tremendous, you know, grief, collective grief across communities. Let's face it, we could feel it energetically if we're paying attention. And I know I certainly did. I mean, look, I'm in New York, and not like we were the only ones who got hit, but that first stream of you know, collective damage was just so palatable. Oh, it was awful, but you could feel it, and you could feel it just within miles of you. You could feel that eeriness. And so I just will never forget that. It was just strange. And
surreal. I mean, absolutely surreal. And something that none of us, and you know, when you compare it to the last really enormous pandemic, I mean, most of the people who lived, there aren't a whole lot of people left who lived through that in the early 1900s, but it was such a different environment at that point too. Right. So everything, I mean, this was definitely, you know, a once in a lifetime experience for everybody on the planet. And it still is.
Let's hope that's all it is.
Well, my concern is that we're so mobile and, you know, viruses, you know,
this is it now.
This is practice.
Right. Oh boy. Exactly. But I do like the comment you made about, you know, being learning as you're teaching. And I've always felt that in the, you know, in the darkest moments of life, when things are not working out, when the rug has been pulled out beneath you and your heart hurts, I've always prescribed not only to myself, but to those around me who, again, you know, wanted that advice, go volunteer, go help someone. The best way to fill your heart is to go and fill someone else's. The cup runs over, trust me, when you do that, and you find the most tender part of yourself when you're giving. So go do that, because that's how you're going to rebound and come to another understanding of what's truly happening for you and how you can take a step forward, whatever that means, you know? And so, yeah, that one, that really hit me and resonated with me.
It makes a huge difference. I mean, it's not only good for you, it's taking your mind off of things. It's giving you something purposeful.
Yes.
You're helping others and you're getting a different perspective. I used to say some of the most well-balanced people on the planet are hospice volunteers and hospice nurses, because I've worked with a lot of them and they have their own challenges and tribulations as anybody else. But that kind of work provides such reward and perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's interesting because as I dive now into this new pathway, that is, again, strange to say, to be elated or feel excited, but I am excited to carve out a space in my workload to dedicate, you know, solely for the purpose of giving my time up freely to be in service of those who are in need on that side, passing or grieving from someone who's lost their loved one. That's just a space that I find is critical, because we don't need any more books describing to us how we feel. I mean, it's lovely to tell me what my stages are or how I feel, if that's true, actually, it may or may not be. But what people really need is the plan to move forward and the plan to do the best they can, like you mentioned, with this one and precious life. I know I didn't get Mary's line exactly right, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
You could probably recite that better for me, but truly, don't waste time. Keep going, you know, and do it in the best way you can. And even though it's a critical, you know, time of pain and discomfort, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't still see yourself as valuable and of service.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Right.
And because it also, I think the thing that I see so often and feel so often from folks is people do lose their sense of meaning and purpose, you know, because they've lost part of whoever they love is part of who they become. Right. I mean, if we didn't love, gosh darn it, grief wouldn't even exist. So,
that's,
you know,
right.
Log on it on to love. But, you know, when you're giving to somebody else, it just does. I mean, there's actually biochemical reactions that happen in your body. I mean, it is truly healing for most people. And it doesn't involve, you know, you just have to find what's meaningful to you, your own path. And I think that's the most important piece, is having tools and resources that don't tell you, you must do this or you must do that, or the only path is this. But, you know, here are some tools or approaches or, you know, habits, strategies, rituals, mindsets that can be helpful. Adapt it to what is going to work for you. And that's where I think the difference is people know they have to find their own way. And even having a supportive community of others, whether that's family or whether it's a therapeutic group, because sometimes the people that can support us are not our immediate others. Sometimes they can't support us in the way we feel we need. And sometimes it is joining a group of others on a similar pathway that can, that you can really open up to. But whoever that is, there's still that time, and it's often in the evening time when we are alone, and the only one that can be our therapist is ourselves.
That's right. Because when everybody else is like, you know, got done for their day and they're off doing their thing, and then we're solo sitting in that space, it's the loudest silence you could probably ever have. Let's face it.
It's a great way of putting it. Right? Absolutely a great way of putting it. It yeah. absolutely is. And yeah. my experience is nights, definitely, because you're getting to the ending of the day
yeah.
and it's dark and there's just so much, you know, physically and imagistically right. that become a weight at the end of the day. And so having some strategies that you can deploy, and you're not going to win every day. There are going to be some days you just, you know, cry into your pillow. But then there's other days you're going to be able to say, you know what, I'm going to go do X, or I'm going to go do this, or I'm going to turn in this direction. And little by little, that those breaks in grief start to expand, and the light that's really always been there is now coming in and reaching you.
Yeah, that's great. I love that. So I guess there's like a whole bunch of things that I'm curious about. And so, I don't know how much we'll be able to get to in one day. So this could be a multi-part conversation at some point. But you've worked a lot around the world. It hasn't just been in a local or domestic capacity. And so have you found that the work you've done has always been about collective grief or individual grief, whatever communities or countries that you might have been visiting? Has it been for the sole purpose of being able to help a community or help individual families navigate through? Has that been primarily the focus?
Well, I would say it's more of a blended focus. I mean, often I'm representing people from the United States who want to, you know, make an impact in the well-being, often of children, families, and communities, community development, child development. But, you know, and there's this tendency, we've all heard, you know, most of us have heard of the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And again, that's another hierarchy that's a wonderful tool. But what I've also discovered, it's not entirely accurate, because there's this feeling that you have to have food, shelter, all of that before you can start thinking about, you know, meaning and purpose in life and some of those higher levels on the pyramid, right? And what I discovered in this process is, yes, you need food, water. Those are going to be predominant things on your mind. If you don't have a clean source of water, children can't go to school in most places. They don't have shoes, you know, it can be dangerous to walk miles to get water or to go to school. And so you've got issues of potential sexual abuse for little girls that are doing chores, are all those at, but inside there, when you talk with people and you talk with the leaders in some of these communities in developing countries, they may be struggling at the baseline, but there's this huge pride and this huge ability to see that there's something so much more. So for me, a big part of the motivation has been not only to figure out how does good intentions and dollars, again, not do good to other people, but what is it that they intuitively know that they need and want? So it's not about going in and saying, we think you should have a school and water. You know, if they think what they really need is a health clinic, you know, or nurse or nursing training. So right. Let's figure out what they think and help them figure out what they think they want and then provide that. But my own experience is you can't do that without acknowledging the dynamic of being a human being in any place and time. And part of that is dreams. Part of that is, you know, and even helping people to dream, and also realizing, you know, I grew up with parents that said, you can be anything you want to be if you put your mind to it. In many places around the world, that's not really true, because
that's right.
either politics, economics, cultural expectations for roles become, you know, can become ceilings for people.
There are limitations. So, yes, absolutely.
Exactly. So that ability to still see what's possible and expand people's ideas about what's possible for their, you know, one wild and precious life.
That's it.
Is important work. So water will go a long way. Shelter, food, schooling, all those incredibly important, but so will helping to empower people to dream and really see their life as something precious in a world where they may see a lot of death around them.
Right. And there, and loss is a whole different meaning for them. I mean, not to say that, again, we're not measuring pain, but depending on where we're pointing to on the map, day-to-day living can be just tremendous and filled with loss in a way that, let's say in this country, people just do not understand and have not been exposed to.
It's different. Yeah, it's different. The fact pattern is different. Also the cultural pattern. And, you know, one quick little aside, Susan, is when I was in Liberia, for instance, one of the program staff that was working with children and teenagers in particular, Liberia had experienced 20 years of civil war. And so you had a whole generation of young people growing up that knew only war. And one of the things that she pointed out to me is when you grow up and death is all around you, you never know if you're going to see the next hour or the next day, when your half of your family is murdered, you actually grow up with potentially with a violent nature. And so one of the challenges is if you've grown up with that and that's what you think is normal, how do we help these young people? In some cases, villages were afraid for them to even come back home, you know, or they might not have even had a village to come back home, but you know, all of those challenges. So it was eye-opening for me to realize that that is true in places in the United States too. If you're growing up in an area where there's a lot of, or in a family, it can be just a family where violence is the way things happen. The idea of death, loss, the value of life is really different.
And low on the scale of things. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
And people
right.
can feel limited self-worth, you know? I mean,
right.
I think.
Well, because they don't have a large scope to dream or to look and see possibilities in. It's everything is curbed and stunted in that way. And so suddenly it's like the ceiling is really at the floor for them. If you're looking at it in terms of size and there's nowhere to go and they have no idea. Like they don't even know that they have an actual limitation.
Oh yeah. I mean, I tell the story in my book of being in Ecuador, for instance, and asking a little boy in my very bad Spanish, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? And his answer was alto, which means tall. I mean, the idea of like, you know, a doctor, lawyer, community leader, whatever, that wasn't really quite in the docket. That is now. I mean, more young people are thinking about that, or sometimes people assume whatever their parents are automatically, that will be that. Right. And that is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, it's not a value judgment. Just, you know, what if that's not where your skills and talents? I mean, for me, that's where the working with developing communities and challenged communities and, you know, who knows where the next cure for cancer or the next exquisite dance performance is going to come from if you don't unlock the potential of people.
Right. No, absolutely. I think that's beautiful. Really, really beautiful. And clearly the work you're doing is significant and tremendous. And I hope that you have the chance to carry on and do more of that, because we're at a shortage of people who really care and want to spread that kind of information and love, quite honestly. That's what it is. It's spreading love.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I mean, I feel, you know, blessed to be able to do what I do. I'm not perfect like anybody else. I'm human too.
That's okay.
But, it's part of that is, you know, one of the beauties of getting farther along in life is it gets easier and easier to get closer to the core of what it means to be you and how you can be you the best.
Right. Oh, isn't that just that's where I am. I'm over 50 now. So I'm really at a place where I feel like I've paid closer attention to what's important, what my meaning and purpose are all about. And I, every day it's a journey to just do my best it's a service job now, right? That's what the whole point of this has been for me. And so how do I give more and more and more? And how do I, you know, create that pathway so that that's exactly what my life looks like? That's all that I want to do at this point. So yeah, it's important.
Easier to focus, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah, no, it is. It is, because it's just really about giving. And there's so many places to do that, because there's so much, you know, there's so much need. Let's face it.
Yeah.
There's so much need.
Absolutely. Yeah. So. I always say in philanthropy, I'd love for, you know, humanitarian organizations to go out of business. Unfortunately, the realities of life is that there will always be some degree of struggle and strife and poverty that, you know, the rest of us want to try to ameliorate.
Exactly. Well, hopefully that's the case, because the alternative would not be good of turning a cheek. So yes, exactly. Let's just hope that that's how we keep our focus. I have a question for you, because I really enjoyed reading about the different phases or practices that you were sharing. from telling your lost story to, setting a good feeling intention and creating, it's almost like a strategy. It's like, it's just really like, what do I want to get out of the next step in my life or this next phase? Sensory ritual. Oof, I really, really love that. But I'm a touchy-feely person. So I feel like when it comes to senses, I could see where that would be such an important step in the process to pay mind to,
Yes.
Yeah. And that, not for the purpose of like, oh, go distract yourself, but sort of it's an intimate experience to reconnect. I took it that way, to sort of almost reconnect with yourself and to feel something else, beyond what your brain might be telling you or your heart might be giving you in terms of a feeling. And so that's what that said to me.
Well, definitely. I mean, there is a degree to which there is some diversion, right? But part of it is, that's the mindful element, right? Without getting into mindfulness, which sometimes people that don't practice mindfulness, it sounds like, oh, I got to go sit on a, cushion forever. And meditation is helpful. I'll be the first to say that. But
I agree. Not everybody understands the practice, right? Yes, I get it.
Right. And you can be mindful in any single moment. Right now, we can be mindful as we're having this conversation, as I listen to your voice and really paying attention to the lilt, the rise and the fall, and what I hear in your voice. And so for me, it's drawn, there's so much going on in our mind. And I think for a lot of people when they are grieving, and again, it may be loss of someone you love, but it may be, all kinds of other loss. We know divorce is like a death for sure, right? It may be, job stuff. It could be all kinds of things, but there's almost always a lot going on inside your head and your heart. And by focusing on something specific, whether it's something immediately around you or something, I've been in meetings where I've thought about like my left foot and just focus there, because it's been very grounding and helps me clear my head. It's the analogy I use in my book is going into a restaurant and maybe you're with your sweetheart and there can be a lot going around. There could be clanking forks and knives and the server might have dropped a plate of spaghetti and, let out an expletive and all this going on. But in the middle of all that noise, you can hear the voice of your sweetheart. Because you're focused there, right? And so I think for me, that's a little bit what a tiny come back to your senses ritual is. For that moment, you're focused. And for me, it started with walking out and listening to the sound of river over rocks. And at times I even thought I heard voices, but it's really just the music of the water and the rocks and the movement. And it wasn't until I began walking back to the house that I realized, oh my gosh, in that space, I didn't feel awful. In that space, it was all was good, and that's for me the meaning of joy.
And that particular experience, which for you, it was the river and the rocks, but whatever it is, that's it. It's just you and that in that environment, in that space, hearing or feeling or smelling or seeing whatever it is that's taking your mind over there. I love that.
Oh,
but I'm that person too, who enjoys, a sunrise or the waterfront or the way it makes me feel. And so that's a place I go to when I need to find peace, because that's where I know to find it and to get it. So that really is very meaningful. And again, these are small gestures, but significant, like life-changing, and life-shifting kind of practices. So that's why I think I love them so much. You know what I mean?
Well, they're more powerful than they seem. I mean, that's what I talk about. You don't have to have a lot of time. Like sometimes people say, take a half an hour and do this. Well, people may, if you're in one type of grief, a half an hour is forever. Another type of person is just pushing through as quickly as they can to try to avoid grief. So it can be a very tiny segment, and you don't have to be a nature person. Someone said, well, Kelly, I'm not a nature geek like you are. And so my comment was, I said, well, cause I also believe you want to build these rituals cause many of your habits are going to get broken when you're grieving. Right. So find something that's still working. And she goes, well, Kimberly, the thing that's working for me is, I basically cry into a glass of wine at the end of every day. I get through the day. I do what I've got to do at work, and I said, okay, let's start with, you're going to drink a glass of wine. You're going to use every one of your senses to drink that glass of wine.
She
goes,
right.
Okay, I've got the taste. I've got the smell. How do you hear wine? I said, well, tap the edge of the glass listen to your sense as you swallow. Do you hear yourself swallowing? Yeah. And she said, it was the craziest thing, but she said it made all the difference. And she said, I also drank my wine slower because she admitted in grief, she was doing a little bit more of the wine drinking than was healthy for her. So it slowed her down and she enjoyed the glass of wine more. So her comment to me was, when I saw her a couple months later, is I'm not wasting as much wine and I'm enjoying it a lot more. So,
oh my gosh, I love it. And see, now her ritual includes you. So isn't that cool? She's also brought an element of some wine into her.
That. Yeah.
You know, even if she's by herself, she's not by herself because you are in her head somewhere, having given her this more conscious practice of the way in which she even consumes her glass of wine. I love that.
I hadn't thought about that.
Right? I mean, yeah, right, no, it's, yeah, it's great. It's a richer experience.
Spooky.
No, it's all good. It's all good. but I think, you know, for those, again, like you were just starting to say about not, you know, people not wanting to utilize like let nature for music. Music is a great place for people to feel distracted and go into something, you know, and maybe they want to move their body, or maybe they want to sing, or maybe they just want to hear it and let that be the escape, or, you know, carry them and transport them someplace. But anything that soothes you or moves you or makes you feel something else than where you might have been, you know, so.
The important part
that.
Is it has to be individual, because the one yes. challenge with sensory things is, for instance, if you're going to use your sense of scent, which a lot of times we don't use. I mean, we smell things, but we don't often intentionally focus on our sense of scent, which is often tied to breathing too. So there's some double benefits to focusing in that way. But for instance, if you're in a room that smells of the mother that you lost or your husband's shirts, that might not be the sense to start with, right? You might want to start with your sense of hearing or just something visual. Music could be triggering on one hand, or it could be, you know, I've also had people discover doing something completely different that they've never done. So if they've always listened to jazz, they may suddenly find themselves listening to bluegrass and discovering, you know, this whole, you know, because I think
it's not tethered or tied to anyone or anything in their life. It's completely a standalone. Right. Yeah. No, I could understand that. Yeah.
Yep. And it creates a new openings. I mean, you know, people,
right. It's like taking a new pathway to a wherever you're going. And you're like, I never travel down this road. And it's kind of great. You know, it's distracting in a kind of an interesting way. Yeah. Oh, I think that's just terrific. I can talk about this stuff all day. Again, this is the third time that I'm going to say I'm excited about talking about this topic. But I think I am a person who loves humans. And I love the human experience. And I, like you, have had much of it. And it's been up and it's been down and it's been all over the place. And I've had to, you know, heal and go through my own journey of understanding love and loss and just experiencing life in that full way. And so, and it matters to me how people feel. It matters to me how people experience life. It matters to me how they come out of it. And it matters to me that people understand how important joy is. Joy is just huge. And I, to me, it almost feels like a birthright. You know, it's like everyone is entitled to it. Everyone should have it. And if you don't have it and you don't feel it and something in your life or everything in your life isn't allowing you, all I want to do is like be side by side listening and maybe giving some bits and morsels and nuggets of information that will help someone steer toward that joy. Cause that's what it's about. So. Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, empathy has always been needed. I do feel like, you know, at this point in time, empathy goes a lot farther than ever before. And, you know, even thinking about, you know, the work that's done with people in other countries or in struggling communities here in the U.S., when you see people, when you actually see someone for who they are, their struggles, their joys, their beauties, their challenges, their difficult past and their potential as well, and you feel that empathy, I also feel like that's the very first step toward peace. So I feel like when we actually care about each other, we are these little drops in the pond that I think lead to a larger peacefulness.
That's where healing begins.
Yeah, I think so.
I think
sounds
so.
A little Pollyanna, but
I don't care. I'll take it.
True.
I do too. But you know, let's face it. You could smile at someone who's having an awful day, and you don't know that, but they do. And that smile could have just changed them. They might have just been at a point where they are giving up on people because they're so tired of blah 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 blah. Or you know, even last year this time, when we were just going into COVID. I'm in a Starbucks. I just happened to be, it was probably the last time we were able to get anything. And I was traveling. I was trying to return home. And there was a young man behind me or sat next to me, whatever it was. And he needed something. Pay it forward. I was like, the drinks are on me today. He's like, what? And I'm like, the coffee's on me today. And his eyes just opened up like, but I'm like, it's all good. You know, and it was just that a quick thing, because people have done that for me. You know, I've had that happen. Any exchange where you do, I mean, those are more fluffy, like, you know, inconsequential things. But I think just being seen or being acknowledged in any way, right. it really has a domino effect. And I was having this conversation with another person recently. I'm like, we're actually responsible for being kind, decent people.
Yeah. And, because, you know, and it isn't inconsequential or fluffy. I would actually challenge you a little on that.
The coffee? Because, okay.
Because I think seriously, you know, what you just shared, again, to put that in the context of grief, a lot of times when people start feeling like they don't want to continue because they've lost somebody, these little things are actually part of the, you know, we never know the impact we have in the world. Right. You know, we never really know how that buying that coffee, and not only in that moment, but how does that affect that person and how that person affects others? I mean, everything is connected to everything, right? So particularly if you're in a state of grief and you feel like you can't go on, it's helpful to help when people are open to it, to remind them that they have a larger impact in the world, that their life really has meaning, even if they can't see it right now through their actions, and that they're having a meaningful impact in ways that they can't fully appreciate, and to encourage them to kind of hang in there, because we all do it. I mean, we all have these moments and they seem inconsequential, but I can't tell you, most of the time we'll never know, but every so often something bubbles up and you have a chance where somebody reaches out to you to say, you know what, or you run into somebody you hadn't seen in years and said, you know what, and they'll tell you the story and you're sitting there thinking, I don't even remember saying that, you know. I don't remember saying that. It's like, sounds like something I'd say, you know, and you,
but it left
no
them
idea.
Feeling a certain way, and it did something. No, that is beautiful. You're right. You're absolutely, you know what? You're absolutely right. It is lovely. That's happened to me a couple of times. And I thought, Oh, did I? Oh, well, I'm so glad that I did, you know? But that's also a testament to the fact that, I don't know, I don't think about it.
Right.
I don't think about it. It just, that's how I respond. And then I'm trying to encourage more of that of myself and anyone else. So. Right.
Well, I gotta get to the Starbucks near you.
There you go.
I gotta get treated.
Don't you remember when we used to have tolls and we had to stop and pay?
Yes.
And we used to have it's something in my family. We used to have a good time. You know, it wasn't really messing with the person behind us as much as it was an exciting moment. It was like, hey, and for the dude behind, you know, and
you'd have look in the rearview mirror
and you'd do one of these and you'd wave, and it was just like, I don't know, it was kind of like a fun and exciting surprise and an unexpected one, obviously. And so, yeah, things like that stayed with me from when I was young. So I just feel like, oh, you know, there has to be a place now, since we can't do that because everything is digital. But like, how do we pay it forward? Like, how do we show up for a complete stranger and just do a nice gesture, or I don't know, make someone's day with a little something, something. Right. That's how I see it.
But you're right though. I mean, I think about when people have done like these things, these small, you know, acts of kindness or whatever, yeah. How often when I've been the recipient of that, how often it has come at a time where I've even said to myself, wow, I really needed that right now.
That's exactly,
you know,
it.
And
well,
you just
exactly
don't know,
it.
You know,
right.
That's that sort of interconnectedness that I think is there, that there is this web of life and we're all part of it. And we, you know, I think about it, you know, I'm kind of a natural science geek too. And so, you know, the whole concept of, you know, if you destroy one butterfly, could you change, you know, the entire ecosystem? But there is some truth that you remove one thing here or there. You know, people often will say to me, why didn't you have children? Well, there's, you know, a few different reasons why that's the case, but I like to kid around and say, well, that's one more seat for your kid when they, you know, get on the bus, or when they, you know, because all these little decisions do create a ripple effect way beyond any of us.
Right.
And that's why I really do believe, regardless of whatever we think happens after this life, this is our one and only life that we know of, this moment right now.
That's right.
And I just really don't want people to throw it away. You know, I really do believe everybody has a heartbroken element and a beautiful element that I want them to know.
I love that. That's such a beautiful place to sort of sum up if we could for today, because that is exactly true. Well put. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad we got to chat today. And I have to tell you,
Me too.
I feel like there's so much more to chat about. So I want to definitely do part two with you without a doubt. If you will give me that time, because I just feel like we could certainly talk more about
Sure. Yeah.
All of
yes.
this. That would be great. Yeah,
no, that would be great to do. Yes,
I think so. So we're going to, for the listeners, we're going to make sure that I'm going to include in the show notes all of the information and ways in which they can find you. And of course, find Grieving Us, a field guide for living with loss without losing yourself, Kimberly Pittman Schultz. And we're also going to include a link to Kimberly's website where listeners can obtain more information and nuggets of wisdom.
Absolutely. I've actually set up a special landing page for Dreams and Detours listeners so that they'll see your familiar podcast cover and not feel like they're in like going to somebody's home you don't know. They'll feel like they're at home.
That sounds perfect. And we'll make sure all that's included. And I thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Susan. It's been an absolute pleasure.
That's it for this episode of Dreams and Detours. If you like the show, please rate, review, and subscribe and share it with your friends. You can find me at dreamsdetours.com and at dreamsdetours on Instagram. Thanks for listening.